Started today. Thanks for being here at the new and improved OC. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to look around so far. It's not completed, but I think there's still October 1. I think we're looking to open the whole thing up, so it's looking good. Welcome to the new year. Hope the semester's gotten off to a good start. So September 20, 2018. We don't have a long agenda. We've got couple items of interest, I hope, for you today, though, and obviously making sure the committees are set are another important part of the agenda. So first off, appointment of Senate parliamentarian. Well, right now, this is Michelle Piskulich, who is going to sit in for today. Do we have any burgeoning parliamentarians out there? I don't know if we might be talking to you if you, we're still kind of working on that one, so.
Begging, maybe.
If we make mistakes today, then you can yell from the audience. It's fine. We'll be okay with that. Yeah. Appointment of Senate Secretary Dicka Bervin. And there should be some music or fanfare or something along with that. So thanks, Dicka, for doing that. And the Elections Committee, Shaturi Edrashina is chairing that. Richard Olawayan and Joe Rieger are those members. They're here today. Thanks for doing that. The Ad Hoc Campus Tree Advisory Committee. This committee was appointed by the steering committee this summer, and we wanted you to see the charge. The membership will be on the Senate website. Pat Engel and Steve Stanton will update the Senate later this fall. We couldn't get that quite done today, so we'll let you know a little bit more about that next time. So I think that's that part. I'm actually going to move over to the podium for a second. So the next part under my updates, I'm just going to walk you through some of the major items that have taken place over the summer, a little bit about enrollment update, a little bit about something called a strategic enrollment management plan we're going to be undertaking. We're sort of in the process of getting started, and all that rolls together. So give me a second. Okay, so somewhere it was late July, we had a president's retreat, and our president, Ora Peskovitz, asked me to put together the agenda, really, as we were trying to think about how do we look at the strategic plan, how do we look at what the state of the university is right now. And I know you've heard this many, many times about the landscape of higher education. You're reading it in the Chronicle, you're reading it. Whatever societies you're in, you're seeing enrollment trends in our state, in the Midwest, in the East, in the South, and how they're all different. But overall, I think you might have heard this before, that college enrollment, now we don't have the updated stats yet. About December we'll know for the country what's happened with college enrollment overall. But through last December, the last time it was reported, 6 years in a row, university college enrollments had declined. And now it's the sectors are a little different if you look at 4 years and 2 years. So you need to parse out the info to see what it means. But it's really affecting all of us in higher ed to try and determine, because a place like us that's 80% or 81% tuition driven, we need to plan for not just this year and next year, but for the future and what we're going to be doing. So I won't belabor each slide here, but I'll just kind of take you through some of the background. So again, I mentioned Strategic Enrollment Management Plan. What's that? SEM is this acronym used for a Strategic Enrollment Management Plan. And in our retreat this summer, we brought in a facilitator from a group called ACRO, which is basically a National Association of Registrars and Admissions Directors. And they're expert in sort of building some of these plans that involve a whole university. And thinking about enrollment, it's not just the admissions office, it's really everyone trying to get involved. So we're in the middle of that. But the backbone to a SEM plan is the strategic plan. So I know you know these, but student success is at the center of our first goal. Second goal is around research. Third goal is around community engagement, community partnerships. And the fourth goal, which you'll remember from last year, and you'll remember how much fun we have writing these in this meeting. It's really great. In fact, today I thought we would undertake another writing exercise just for fun. Now we won't do that today. Our challenges around what we just said, in meeting those strategic goals, you do need funding for some things. There's no doubt about it. Whether that funding is new money or if you have to reallocate funds to your strategies, how do you do that and keep the strengths where you need them? So sustainable funding model is what we're really talking about with the enrollment fluctuations, let's say, going on in the country and certainly in Michigan. I mentioned just a minute ago, you know, we're more than 80% tuition driven here. Again, I know these are repeats, but those of you who've been around here a long time would have remembered when it was 70% from the state, maybe more. I think the year that we've used as examples around 1978 or something, we were 75% state funded. University enrollment in Michigan we're actually one of the worst in the country, I hate to tell you, and that has to do with birth rates and how they're affecting, you know, where we're finding the 18-year-olds over the next several years. Not every year goes down, but there are some kicks up, but overall from now till about 2032, it's a downward trend in Michigan. And it affects us because we pretty much, our enrollment base is in Michigan, so that leads to some other ideas about enrollment planning and what could we do. If for example, we were going to think about more out-of-state recruitment, that's not easy, and we have to think about how we would do that, but those are the kinds of things we're undertaking. And, you know, some of the other things going on, there's no doubt about this. For us to think, I think us in any university, to think that every year you're just going to be able to raise tuition 3% or 4% and keep doing this, doesn't seem that tenable. I mean, we're going to need to think about, you know, alternative ways to do this. So we're talking about a strategic enrollment management plan. I'll get into a little bit about what that means. Most of it isn't really very complicated. It's based around three main sectors that I'll talk to you about in a minute. But the main thing I guess I'd mention about a strategic enrollment management plan is think in your mind, you're already going to know this, but where does our enrollment come from? First-year students, transfer students, graduate students, international students. And then think about what about adult learners and those kinds of things, online, those. We haven't done a whole lot with that. We're doing some, but those are things that we do want to think about. So we want to create a strategic plan for student retention. Obviously, I think that's a no-brainer. We talk a lot about that in here. Looking at our numbers now, you're going to see this in a minute in one of the subsequent slides. Admissions has done, and the university has done, a remarkable job, and I credit faculty, deans, admissions, graduate, everyone. Right now, we have, and it looks like it's holding, we have the largest freshman class we've ever had. And that's in this market. It's unbelievable. It's a 10% increase over last year. But, and I'm actually jumping a slide, so I'll be able to go through that one quickly, but if you look at total enrollment, and that means, so who are most of our students? It's not the new students. That's not most of our students. Most of our students are the ones already here who return. And those rates of return, we've been doing somewhat better, but it's been a slow progress on the returners. So when we lose, from our first to second year, 25% of our students, and second to third, a little more than that, et cetera. Our return rate, we far outpaced what our predicted return would be this year. But overall, with that larger freshman class, transfers were down. So that balanced it a little bit. We're about flat. We're actually, I think the last report that came out, we were down like 0.3% headcount, but up in credits. So it's a good picture because we had planned on a negative 3-ish% or more, so we really outdid ourselves, and that's good, but we're not taking any comfort in it. We know we want to look forward. So retention, the first one under point one, it's about recruitment. Under two, it's retention. This third point is thinking about how do we generate, and we're calling them additional credits here, credits on top of what we already do. If we do more online with things that we're not currently offering, not stealing credits from in face-to-face courses, but how do you find new initiatives that would generate additional credits? OU is not very deep in the online arena. We have some things, and we're making some progress, but we could do more. What about the adult learner? I think Macomb County has 200,000 people in that county with some college credits but no degree. So these would be people who stopped out of college for whatever reason. That's a market that we could maybe get to return in what majors. That's what we're trying to look at, and what kind of offerings could we have to offer those folks to generate more credits beyond face-to-face our regular courses that we currently have. So this scenario, this is a slide from Laura Sharpman's shop. And what it sort of shows is there are a lot of reasons that, you know, we had this 20,261 peak. It actually had to do a little bit with how we were counting students in 2015. So you can see where we are now, over 19,000. We really didn't lose 1,000. If you look at it, it's hard to explain. I won't go into it all. We really didn't lose 1,000 students. Some of it had to do with where we were counting and those kinds of things, but I won't go into all that. What I will tell you, though, is if we take where we are now, I think last year we were actually 19,300-plus students. If we don't do anything to change our current strategies, the way we recruit students now, how we buy names, where we recruit, the strategies we currently have, these are the predicted, and they're just predictions. They're not. We don't know. Things could change. But these are simply predictions that say we wouldn't get back to where we are. We're in 2016, I guess it is, 19,929 until 2022 in the ambitious effort. So you can already imagine between now and 2022, I know it's really not that far off, right, 2022, but every year the university functions just as we are, and you know this, utilities increase, personnel costs increase, even if you don't change anything. So you end up with less money if you don't actually find a spigot somewhere else. So we don't want that curve to be the one, is my point. That's what it would be, but we're going to try to change it. So right now I'm going to make some quick work of some of these slides. It might be hard to read from where you are, but if you look at undergraduate total at the top, again, this is on the model that if nothing really changes in our current strategy, moderate growth, we'd still be in the negatives, minus 3.7%. We don't want that. If we're ambitious, maybe we're a little bit over at 0.4%. New undergraduates, maybe we can grow a little bit there, as the prediction shows. Returning undergraduates, that number, look at that one, right? What does that mean? So minus 11% in steady state, minus 5.3% moderate, minus 1.1. Here's where we have an opportunity, if we can keep them here. Right? So it's that retention part, not just first to second year, second to third year, third to fourth year, and then on to graduation. What's built into this model is growth in the graduate arena, and that's what we'll need to try and get to. Yes, Dave?
Sorry to interrupt. Yep.
Yeah, I'll get there. Okay, it's actually in a subsequent slide, so I'll show you how that looks. Okay, I don't need to do. I kind of went through all this. All right, so here, you know what? Headcount. You know, we all play. All admissions directors report numbers. Like to report that they're up, of course, right? Because you want to show real things. To our finance office, what do they care about? Credits. We could have less students and more credits, and we're happy. Right. So headcount is important. Headcount includes all the students attending your university. I don't have it on these slides, but for another time, because I do like talking about this, but you know, you'll see numbers like FTE. This headcount means this is just the number of students coming. Could be part-timers, could be full-time. It's all the students who come, discrete students who attend your university. When you measure it at 30 credits a year, and do an FTE number, like if you look at U.S. News and World Report, you'll notice OU's enrollment more around 16,000 students. That's because you're counting full-time equivalent students. So that's why those numbers vary. But what you can see here, so it's 2016, we peaked. In the last couple of years, they've gone down some. Not to a disastrous level, but to me and to all of us, certainly at the university, we're taking this very seriously. If this continues going downward, we're going to have big challenges in terms of how to do what we need to do budget-wise. Credit generation, this again, I won't go through this in detail, but certainly some point, some sessions, hopefully your deans or others will be able to show you more of this. The college is very important to the institution. You can see that here, right? That's where most of the credits come from. So if the college declines in credit generation, as it has the last couple years, it's a big effect. Because that bar is a little higher in the chart than you see in the other schools. Engineering has grown quite a lot, continues to grow quite a lot. Remarkable things going on in engineering, but realize the number of credits generated are at a lower tier, so it won't fix our problems to just have engineering grow. However, there's a little bit of a cross pollination that goes on here because more majors and more credits generated in engineering also mean they're taking courses in the college. So There's that analysis we have too. Here's something very positive, right? Our university has never been over 50% in our six-year graduation rate. We've never been over 50%. Ruben still hasn't stamped it for me, but he is confident that this will be the first year that we cross the 50% six-year graduation rate. And that's great. And we need to do that and more. Now, Laura's projection out, and this is a caution to us, if we don't do more things, we're stuck, right? We don't want to be stuck at 50 or 52%. We want to continually improve that. Let me give you a converse challenge on this, though. When we graduate students faster, they're not coming back, right? So all of a sudden, your next year return numbers are 300 or 400 students less. So that's a further challenge. That means we have to recruit more students, right, in the front door. We want this problem, first of all, but it's one that we have to deal with. I won't make long work of the online enrollment, but basically, if you look at where we are, I asked this question, we got the answer. About 40% of our students enroll in at least one online class. Now, I think that shows there's interest in doing some online delivery. Again, I would say that the goal from me and from all of us at the institution is not to simply replace credits from face-to-face. It's how do you augment what you already are delivering at the university. Some of the things on the upper right are either already in place or on the way. PhD in nursing is actually in place now. It was approved, right? And other programs that are coming online. The RN to BSN program in nursing is fully online. We have some things like this. We need more. I think we need more, and especially in those places where the market demands it. So that's the kind of work we want to do next. Was there anything else there? I think that was it. These go out in reports pretty much on a weekly basis right now. I'm just going to point you this way. New undergraduate students, new FIDIAC enrollments are up 10%. How about a hand for admissions? I think they deserve it. I think. Yeah. I'll tell Dawn we gave her a hand. Actually, it is remarkable. I mean, you know, as we were looking at the numbers, going, well, is this going to stay? It's, you know, we've been through this before where you see pretty good numbers in June and then starts to whittle back. But it stayed. You know, we're in good shape there. Transfer enrollment, big caution, huge caution, down 3.5%. 40% of our enrollment comes from transfers. So you might have seen, I don't know if you look at these kinds of things on the web or whatever, we put out a news announcement on purpose to make visibility of the fact that we have new articulation agreements with OCC and MCC for business. And the reason for that, we hit business first with these new transfer agreements, was that's the area. We have all the data on where students are looking to transfer, and business is the top one. So we're trying to hit one by one at the university. What articulation agreements? Where are we not competitive? And I can tell you this, I don't think business would mind because they did some great work on this. We were comparing side by side. Wayne State's a place that has actually grown their transfer enrollment. They've done some things downtown Detroit that are helping them in their enrollment. When they would put side by side a business curriculum, they would see that they could transfer 64 credits here at OU and 82 at Wayne. And so all they had to do is say, okay, let's see, that's going to take me longer and it's going to cost more money. So, and it wasn't, it's not just Wayne, but they're one of the ones that we looked at. So business, God bless them. they worked hard. They got this into a competitive realm. So we're looking at more of those where we used to be number one in transfer, in the transfer percentages. We slipped down to number five. We can't allow it. I mean, that's going to be one of our most important things. So at the bottom of the page here, what you basically see is our classes, the new class is over 4,000 students with the FIDIAC and transfer enrollment, and we outpaced our projection anyway, so we did pretty well there. New graduate students, we're actually a little bit up overall in graduate students, and that is also reflected on the bottom bar there. It's small increases. I think we're just slightly down in master's, but up in some of the PhD students. Overall enrollment. So this is what I said. So good news on the first-year students, right? I said 10%. Well, sounds fantastic. But when you take all the numbers, we're about 0.3%. You know, we're 3%, 0.3%, behind. And That could still change a little. We're still counting students and doing all that. So it's basically flat. But my point is that even as we did well on the front end, on the returning end, we had some challenges. And again, that could have to do with the more students graduated and didn't return. It has a lot to do with many things, many factors. Here's the good news of what that last slide showed us, though. We budgeted this year. We budgeted to around minus 3.5%. That's how we budgeted, because that's what we believed it could be that low. And we basically ended up flat. So that helped us a lot. I need to get to Dave's question. I think it's on one of these slides now, maybe. 1% enrollment change is 1% tuition rate is about $2 million. Pretty significant. 2%. Well, I mean, I think you could do this math. Everybody understands this, right? Okay, good. And variables, enrollment mix. How many undergraduates, graduates, transfers, et cetera? I mean, these are the we have to play with this. If we don't think we can get a first-year class, we got to make it up somewhere else. You know, more grads, more international, you know, where's it going to come from? Financial aid discount, you know, net tuition revenue is the big deal, too. I mean, it's how much are they – you could have a bunch of students, but if you've discounted everyone to a point where you're not making any tuition net, revenue, you can't pay the bills. So that's another part. All right, this gets a little – I'm going to try to go a little quickly. There are a lot of slides here. Retention. I'm going to make one point on this slide. So the top line is overall – when it comes to first year to second year retention. So it's bounced around, you know, 75%, 76%. But the line underneath are our URM students, underrepresented minority students. And that gap is too big. It's too big. We get called out on it, actually. Some national studies come out with, you know, maybe looking at Pell students and what's their success rate. We've got to close that gap. We think that closing the gap will also make our overall rate jump up, too, because that's what happened to Georgia State. That's what happened to a lot of other places. When they found strategies to help those students who might be having academic issues or financial issues or whatever it might be. So if we put the right things in place, both in the classroom and in the support areas, we hope we can close that gap. That's one of our goals, and that's mainly what these bullet points on the right. But we've made improvements. Do you see the lines going upward? We have made improvements, and we're happy about that. Dave Duilio was asking about what's the difference in 1% in enrollment, but if you look at also retention, it's pretty interesting. After financial aid, first of all, new student brings about $8,322 in tuition revenue per year. So that gives you the idea if you want to call it a discount rate. You know, if our tuition is $12,000, whatever it is, most students are paying around $8-something. So actually, we're going to tweak that number of 3,600 new undergraduate students. If you had a 1% increase in retention first to second year using that number, you got another $300,000. So we are looking at numbers like that. So improving retention is also another way to improve our bottom line. And that's good for everyone. We want the students to retain, and then it obviously helps pay the bills. Here's where we sit in the state. It's not a bad thing to check ourselves on once in a while in terms of retention and graduation rates. First-year retention's on the left, graduation rates on the right. We want to do better than this, both places. We think we can. That's our goal in our strategic enrollment management building. This stuff's pretty interesting. First to second-year rate, that's 77%. Those are the students that were retained. And the rest of them... you can see a little bit, like the 13% who left with academic struggles. I'll focus on that for a second. Half of these students had financial need, the other half did not. But this shows you, kind of slices up the pie and says, all right, you kept 77%. What happened to the rest of them? So if it's financial problems or academic struggles, what do we need to be doing about that? You know, we're looking at things like the gateway courses and looking at DFWI rates. What are we doing in the classroom that we could tweak to try and keep students here, not have them drop out. What are the other issues they're having that we could help them with in the advising realm, et cetera? Then you look at URM students, that number is worse, right? And that's not a surprise because you saw that the gap is kind of wide. 63% we kept them. What about that 28% left with academic struggles? Within this category, 20% of students had financial aid, 8% did not. So what are we doing with URM students when they come in the door? I mean, what do we need to do with all students when they come in the door to keep them here? And the pipeline, isn't that a great graphic? The pipeline, okay, so on the top we have returning white students, on the bottom returning URMs. The top one, you got basically an 80% year one to two. And then year two to three, 71%, 67%, 64%. So that's what happens by the end right now with the stats we have. And then you take the URMs and you're already starting out lower. First, second year, 68%. Then that goes quite a bit down. All right, so that's how you end up with this gap, 45 to 64%. That's a very wide gap in terms of retaining these students. Need to fix that. All right, so what are we doing? Well, one of the things we have going is a student success committee that's made up of a cross-section of campus faculty members, administrators, folks from CMI, places like that. And the mission of that committee is to make recommendations to senior administrators on, you know, everything from we need funding for a bridge program, if that were to be one of the strategies, to different kinds of efforts that that we're not funding the way we need to, or if it's not about funding, what are the things we need to do in the classroom? We talked a lot about the gateway projects that we have with certain courses, not to water them down, but to teach them differently so that we can offer students good pathways within the courses they take. If they take organic chemistry and they realize, you know what, I thought I was going to do, you know, whatever it might be, but it's not going to happen, let's not let them leave. Let's find a path for them. That's the kind of thing we're working on. And we have this phrase, every member of the OU community is committed to student success. Every decision must answer this question, how does it help our students to graduate? So that's how we're trying to build this strategy. All right, so I just talked about the gateway courses. You might have some questions about that, and I'm happy to talk about it. But some faculty members are really working hard at this and using national benchmarks with good universities on how they've undertaken some of the entryway courses that stop students. Biology, calculus, psychology, those tend to be areas that where this happens. And trying to, you know, any courses that have over 20% DFWI, meaning they get a D, an F, they withdraw, or they get an incomplete. If that happens to a student, we have the stats that show their percentage chance of succeeding has diminished greatly if they get one of those grades. Even if they repeat the class and all that, they get behind, they struggle as they go through. So, you know, it's double-edged. We know not every student can be successful, but we'd like to think they can be, and maybe they're not placed right, all right? Maybe if they're not really that good at math or they can't do, where do we put them? You know, how do we find a successful path for them? Okay. So, what we've done is put together this network of names. I think they're the right names up there. On a strategic enrollment management plan. What this is going to do is there already is sort of a recruitment council Don has, but we're putting together a more cross-sectional team to talk about, and here's what I should take a minute on this anyway. We already do a whole lot of planning around recruitment, as you would guess. We do a whole lot of planning around student success over here on the right-hand side. In the middle, I'll talk about that in a second, but all the way to the left, recruitment council. What we're talking about is, instead of thinking with a recruitment plan that might say, okay, this year we were 10% up, next year we want to be 11% up, instead of that, what we're trying to do is say, in 5 years, what is our enrollment target? What would it be? And then really constructing a strategy that would allow us to get there, or at least plan to get there. What would it mean? Does it mean looking at demographics, we're going to have to find way more graduate students? Or, you know, there are going to be all these levers we're going to need to pull around that. On the far right-hand side, we already had a student success committee in place. This is essentially that committee, and we're augmenting it some. There may be more names added to these lists. It's probably going to happen. And they're going. Student success committee might say, we need retention. Our first year to second year rate has been stuck at 76, 77%. How do we get it to 81, like our strategic plan says? Well, we may have to pull some levers. Why are they not retaining? What do we need to do with them? Is it financial? Is it academic? They're working on this, and they're going to make some plans. The middle one isn't necessarily always in a SEM plan, This is the Credit Generation Council, and we're talking about things like adult learning. You know, we have hybrid courses out at Macomb, for example, fast-track programs. How much more of that could we do? How many credits could it generate? What about the adult learner? What about online programs? So we're looking at what we could do there. And there are some subgroups that we need a data team to help us pull data that we need. Graduate is a separate sort of a committee. They're all going to work together. Institutional processes, you'll remember during the strategic, I don't know who's on that, because there were some people in here on that committee probably, on that institutional processes committee. There are some processes we hear about in the admissions area, whether it be undergraduate or grad, that we want to be making better. And then there could be some other processes we talk about, too, to make the university work better. And the International Recruitment Committee, we're still holding our own in the international realm, even though Washington, D.C. isn't helping us a whole lot with international students. We're holding our own, and we're trying to think about what we could do more there. So that's kind of a quick overview of the goals we're setting right now, the goals that we have, and making a real plan, a true plan that we can timeline and benchmark to try and make sure enrollment is steady. A whole bunch of things we all want to do together, but we have to have the footing with enrollment to be able to do them and not slip backwards. You'll see out there, I'm sure, more universities right now are coming out with their enrollment numbers. Some are doing all right, and some are not doing so well. And the ones that are not doing so well, you're also seeing a lot of times headlines that follow that, which are reductions in this or that, everything from athletics to, you know, other issues. I maybe can answer a question or two, but we can get on after that if there are any.
Mm-hmm. So if some of that is happening, of course, internally within the department.
Yes.
But is there a broader vision so that it's cross-disciplinary among, you know, variety? Because I'm thinking of, thank you. Whether it's stackable credits, whether it's looking at some of our work that's cross-disciplinary, that really begins to meet unique targeted goals that students have for their individual learning. I just think that that could be huge.
I think you're on target. And one thing that I think I've noticed since I've been here, and you're mentioning it right now, is there are some interdisciplinary efforts going on. For example, we had a call for centers, and we've got a big data center, and we're doing cybersecurity, and we're doing microwave technology, which is the requirement for those centers that they be interdisciplinary. But we really have not tapped interdisciplinary work or curriculum or offerings here like we might. We also are thinking about things like stackable certificates that lead to master's degrees and those kinds of things that, again, we're doing some of these things, and I'm always, you know, I'm impressed to see what kind of work is happening, but we're going to need to make sure that every voice is heard as this planning goes on so that the committees hear about what's, all right, here's what we're already planning, but we need help to get to the next step. You know, those are the kinds of things we'd like to do. So I think interdisciplinary is part of it. All right, well, you'll hear more from me, and certainly if you ever have any questions about it, let me know. You definitely will be hearing about this because we're going to be spending a lot of energy on trying to put this plan in place. But again, we're off to a good start this semester. We're happy about that. It could have been a much different picture. And for this year anyway, we're breathing a little bit. And now I can tell you, Dawn's already working hard on next year, right? So, and she's going to be working with everyone on that. And numbers are up for next year, so in terms of applications. And it's already happening. So, all right, thanks. Give me a minute to walk over. I really did that just so that we would have enough people show up so we have a quorum. But I think we did have one. Dicka?
All right. So Dan Eloy?
Here.
Zina Al-Salman? Kevin Ball? Paul Battle? Dwayne Baxa? Here. Keith Bourbon? Here. Annika Bo? Adolfo Campoy Cubillo? Here. Louis Shamra? Rebecca Cheesham? Eddie Cheng, yeah. Dan Clark, here. Natalie Cole, Kevin Corcoran, Mary Craig, Debatosh Debna, yeah. Mary Dureski, Judy Didion.
Yes.
Deb Doherty. Dave Dulio.
Here.
Arik Devere.
Yep.
Chaturi Edrashina.
Here.
Andrea Ice.
Here.
Alan Epstein.
Here.
Robert Fulberg. Ryan Fox. David Garfinkel. Ghazi Ghazi. Frank Giblin. Henry Gorin.
Here.
Lila Gessus. Amy Harbin. Niels Herold. Ann Ranchuk.
Here.
Jeff Insko. Brittany Kleinschmidt. Michelle Knox. Mike Lacha.
Here.
Tom Lauer. Michael Long. John Marjoram Lays. Michael Mazzio. Paul McGee.
Here.
John Meldrum.
Here.
Ann Mitchell. Ken Minton.
Here.
Mark Navin. Richard Alawoyan. Mohinder Parkesh.
Here.
Joe Rieger.
Here.
Mark Rigsted.
Here.
Brad Roth.
Here.
George Sanders.
Here.
Nancy Schmitz. David Stone.
Here.
Janelle Townsend. Ron Tracy.
Present.
Bob Van Til. Beth Wallace.
Here.
Steve Weider. Karen Wells.
Here.
And Susan Wood.
Here.
Okay, there is a quorum.
Thank you. Okay, approval of the minutes. There's a story about the minutes. The story is, that we were at our steering committee a few days ago, and Dicka said, you know, I don't remember who said, you know, seconded a motion or something, and we're all looking at each other, I don't remember. She said, I have sketchy notes. I'm not really sure. And it took until Michelle went back to her office and listened to the recording, and imagine how much fun that is, that she realized that Dicka wasn't at the meeting. So. And I don't know what this says about Andrea, because Andrea took the minutes. So.
And forgot that I took the minutes.
So, all that to say, everyone's okay. We're good. And you got your minutes. I think you got them kind of late, so we apologize for that. But I don't know if you had a chance to look at those. And I'm just going to ask, do you have any corrections to the minutes? Do you remember if you were here? Let me see.
I do apologize for two misspellings of names. And Joe, your last name is a small letter, and I apologize for that. I was typing really fast. So, but.
Okay. All right, and no corrections? If there are no corrections, we will consider the minutes approved. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, so elections. Chaturi is here. I'm going to turn it over to Chaturi.
I'm just going to read this because it's quite well written. The Senate needs to fill one year vacancy on the Senate Steering Committee. The only limitation on electability of senators to this committee is that no more than two faculty may be elected from any one organized faculty. So that means for this year, we cannot elect a faculty from the College of Arts and Sciences, and they're not eligible for consideration. The Senate Steering Committee normally meets twice a month, Tuesday afternoons from 1 to 3. To set the Senate agenda, refer business to Senate committees, and receive reports from those bodies, and advise the Senate on governance issues. It may also occasionally meet during the summer. If you wish to nominate someone, please establish in advance that the person is willing to serve. A list of Senate members is available on the Senate webpage, and we've just put it up here.
Ann Ranchuk, I would like to nominate Rebecca Cheesham, who has expressed that she would be willing to serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Cheesham. C-H-I-S-O-M. Sorry.
C-H-E-E-Z-U-M.
Oops.
C-H-E-E-Z-U-M.
Oh.
Cheezum.
Cheezum. Okay. And which college?
Health Sciences.
Health Sciences. Okay. Are there any more nominations? Well, it looks like we have just one person, so we will close nominations. And is it okay if we just have just a show of hands? Or since we have just one candidate.
Motion to approve by acclamation?
Motion to approve by acclamation.
So move.
Second? Is there a second? You should say.
Second. She said second.
Seconded? Okay.
Wood.
I don't know that we need discussion, so all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Say okay.
All right.
Congratulations,
you.
You're the winner. We forgot to say we give prizes for this. No.
And Rebecca, you get to bring your nameplate and come to the front.
Ooh.
Except for there are not enough seats.
We don't have a chair. We can scoot.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'll move.
Oh, yeah. Beth has to leave.
Who has to leave?
You're not getting off there.
Okay.
Are you leaving?
I have to.
Oh.
Bye.
All right, next up on the agenda, we have some titles to just clean up, and I'm looking for a motion for the steering committee for these changes. Do I have a motion?
Don't move. There's no names there for motions.
I'll make it.
Oh, okay. Right, go ahead.
Move that the steering committee change the titles and or offices to reflect current titles and offices in committee membership list.
All right, there's a second?
Second.
Okay, motioned and seconded. Any discussion about these changes? All right, ready to call the, oh yes, Eddie Chang. Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second to waive second reading. Did we do this? I'm looking to the parliamentarian now.
Yes, have discussion.
We need any discussion on the motion to waive. Okay. All in favor of waiving second reading, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. Any opposed? Any abstaining? Okay. So, but we need to vote on it now. Okay. So we'll do that. So a motion to approve as listed. We are motioned and seconded, so any other further discussion? All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, excuse me, quickly, I do know I am here today, and yet I don't know who seconded that motion. To waive the second reading, I heard someone,
Dave.
Oh, thank you.
Dave Duleo, all right, okay. We'll just put Dave Duleo's name in when we don't need it. All right, very good, thanks. So next is a procedural motion to staff Senate standing committees.
Dan Aloy, move that persons listed be appointed to the committees or positions designated.
Second.
Okay, motion and seconded. I don't know that we do discussion on this one. But if anyone wants to discuss anything, tell me. I don't think so. All right, do it. We'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain. Motion carries. We're on to good and welfare. So is there any item for the group? I'll just mention one item, good and welfare, I was going to mention earlier. Capital outlay projects. I don't know that I've had a chance to talk to you much about them in here. Sometimes probably. Last year we had South Foundation Hall expansion project on the docket, and so far not funded. It's forwarding again this year. They're still in lame duck. We're actually still working on that project, on the South Foundation Hall expansion. So that's still on the docket.
Just to prolong the meeting, I have one. So every quarter we report new grants to the board, and every quarter that I've been here, it's been about $2 million. The quarter that ended at the end of the summer, we're about to report just shy of $4 million. So way to go, everybody.
Way to go. Congrats to our faculty. Yeah, very good.
I just would like to remind everyone that last week, and I'm sure you all were waiting with bated breath for this one, the honorary degree call was sent out, and we really are trying to generate honorary degree nominations from people who are leaders within their fields. And so if there are people that you would like to align your department program with that are outstanding faculty or researchers or celebrities, whoever it happens to be, please send those nominations to me.
Okay, not seeing any others. Without, if there are no objections, we are adjourned. We'll see you next time. Thank you.